we're moving into the afternoon, and we have a fantastic progressive champion up next. Mark Pocan's political roots are in blue-collar Kenosha, Wisconsin. He is a leader of the Progressive Caucus, along with Keith Ellison. The two of them are working hard to build the progressive membership in the U.S. Congress. Mark got his start at the age of 8, delivering campaign literature door-to-door for his father, a longtime city alderman. He's a small business owner of a union shop and a lifelong advocate for progressive causes. In Congress, Mark has been a champion for all kinds of issues that impact the people of South Central Wisconsin and a strong voice for progressive values. He sponsored key legislation to raise the minimum wage, ensure the right to vote, make college more affordable, and close tax loopholes that allow large corporations to avoid paying their taxes in the United States and ship jobs overseas. And if you know Mark, you know he just loves his job. He is a happy warrior. This is a man who loves being in politics, who gets along really well with all kinds of different people. He's got boundless energy and creativity. He was an early member of ALEC before a lot of people knew what ALEC was, and one of the very few Democrats who joined the group. And because people didn't know what it was, he did an article for the Progressive Magazine in which he summed it up very nicely, explained ALEC is a dating service for corporations and politicians. And in his pithy commentaries, which he used to do when he was in the state legislature here, he is so good on his feet, and he can explain complex issues very quickly and simply in ways that make them totally understandable to people. So we really enjoy getting him on the Progressive website whenever we can and in the magazine. And I recently learned, and maybe you did too, at a public forum that he held, that Mark, when he took a trip to Columbia with the Columbia Support Network from Madison, a sister city mission, went off the beaten track, went camping in an area where conflict was going on, was kidnapped by the FARC in Columbia, and entertained them with magic tricks. Please join me in welcoming the inimitable Mark Pocan.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It is great to be here at Fighting Bob Fest again. This is the best place to get together with some of the brightest progressive thinkers and doers in the entire country, right here in the heartland of America, Madison, Wisconsin. You know, and coming from the heartland really does make a difference. In the upper Midwest, we are kind, pragmatic people who care about our neighbors and genuinely like other people. We live here in Wisconsin not because of the failed social experiments of professional presidential candidate and occasional governor Scott Walker. Heck, we know he doesn't represent Midwestern values, but this week we sure did learn he represents those illegal donors in the lead paint industry's values. But in the upper Midwest, we have produced some of the best progressive voices in the country. I mean, just think about it. The namesake for this event, Fighting Bob La Follette. Our past and future U.S. Senator, Russ Feingold. Senator Tammy Baldwin. Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa. Progressive Caucus co-chair, congressman, and our keynote speaker in a minute, Keith Ellison. And one of my favorites, former Minnesota Senator Paul Wellstone. In fact, it was Paul Wellstone who said something that I often repeat. It's his famous yet simple statement, "We all do better when we all do better." Think about it. We all do better when we all do better. How true and simple and progressive, and unfortunately not heard enough in politics today. Today, what we get from the Tea Party is a mantra of reducing government to the size that you can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. Well, and a few more choice racist and xenophobic statements. But what we don't hear enough about is how can we, with our collective selves, do better if we all do better. Now, I know there are a lot of progressive issues that everyone in this audience cares about deeply. Addressing climate change, stopping gun violence, changing our campaign financing and redistricting systems, fair taxation, better funding for our K-12 schools, and health care for all. And I agree, we need to fight for all of those things. But what I want to focus on here today is something even more basic. How do we connect not just with progressives, but how do we connect with the vast majority of America, those in the middle class, and those aspiring to be in the middle class? And that's connecting with them on economics, the sort of conversations that happen at dinner tables across the country each and every single day. How do you work a 40-hour week and afford your mortgage and groceries? How are you able to pay for childcare or college or plan that annual vacation? How do you have a quality of life and provide for better opportunities for your families? In other words, how do we all do better? And let me hit on these three areas that I would really be thrilled if progressives would take to heart as points of conversation as we try to reach out to people politically. Because I think we need to go on the offense on these issues because the people are with us on all of these issues. The first issue, how do we help people get good family-supporting jobs? Well, we do that by investing in higher education so that no one is denied simply because they can't afford to attend, and by providing real skill training and apprenticeships for those who choose not to go to college. The average college student graduates with $29,000 in debt, and nearly 70% of all graduates across the country are graduating with some debt. The amount of student debt has increased fourfold in just 11 years, more than $1.3 trillion for 38 million student borrowers. And the cost of college has increased by over 300% in the last 30 years. We need to make sure that if you're smart enough and willing to work hard enough, no one should be denied an access to higher education in this country. And our keynote speaker, Keith Ellison, and I have introduced legislation to do just that, to make sure that you can leave a public university in this country with absolutely no debt and instead invest that time in your family with your new degree. That's how we're going to reach out to people to make sure they want to come out and vote. And let's not forget about the millions and millions of young people who don't necessarily want to go to college, but want the skill training to help them get a good paying job. And that's where we can start with stronger apprenticeships. Over the next decade, 45% of all jobs will be what's called middle skill occupations that require more than a high school degree, but less necessarily than a bachelor's degree. Yet fewer than 5% of people right now in America train as apprenticeships in our country, the overwhelming majority of those in the construction trades. But in Germany, closer to 60%, not 5%, 60% do so in fields as diverse as information technology, banking, healthcare, and more. And individuals who registered with those registered apprenticeship programs earn on average $240,000 more over their careers than those don't. Now look, Wisconsin has been a leader in apprenticeship training since 1911, when we had the first apprenticeship law in the country. Now let's lead the nation on by helping more people get the skills in a whole bunch of new fields to get quality family-supporting jobs through an investment in apprenticeships and skill training. We can do that, can't we? Second, how do we make sure people who are working get paid well enough to support their families? Well, you do that by doing everything we can to make it easier to form a union and to stop things that cost us jobs, like bad trade deals like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The facts are simple. When America has had its highest rates of union membership, we've had our greatest prosperity for the middle class and some of the lowest income inequality ever. And there's a reason why multinational corporations fund candidates and campaigns to hurt unionization. That's because unionized workers make 27% more than non-unionized workers and are significantly more likely to have health insurance and paid sick leave and retire benefits than non-union jobs. We need to make it easier to form a union and take away barriers like Scott Walker's right to work for less law in Wisconsin. We need to pass more measures to make it easier for workers to have a collective voice in their workplaces. And at minimum, let's not make it harder for America to pass bad, let's not make it harder to work, I'm sorry, in America by passing bad trade deals that ship our jobs overseas and depress our wages here. We must stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. Look, tell me what could possibly go wrong with this scenario? A trade deal that's crafted in secret by about 600 largely corporate types that would encompass 40% of the world's gross domestic product and try to have us compete with countries like Vietnam that pay 65 cents an hour. How could anything possibly go wrong with that? Well, everything can possibly go wrong with a trade deal like that. There are no longer trade deals that just try to simply increase American jobs to increase exports. Today, these deals are marginally about trade and more about rewriting the rules for corporations across the globe. And guess what? The middle class gets squeezed in the middle, squeezed out by the financial interests. No TPP, not in lame duck, not now, not ever. And finally, how do we lift people who work hard and play by the rules out of poverty? Well, you do that by raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, and you expand Social Security. Let me ask you a question that'll give you more knowledge on this subject than Scott Walker or Ron Johnson currently encompass. What percent of people making minimum wage are under 20 years old? What percent would you guess? The answer, 11%. These are not at-home teens. In fact, the vast majority of minimum wage workers are women. Average age, they're mid-30s, and for the most part, it's their primary source of income. So much so that they have to have several of these jobs, and often without any benefits whatsoever. When you make a little change over $7 an hour, you make a whopping $15,000 annually. That puts you living in poverty in this country, and a large number of those people have to work additional jobs and receive public assistance. If the minimum wage had kept up with inflation today from the late 60s, it would be about $11 an hour. And if it had kept up with the increases of the top 1%, it would be $28 an hour. Surely we can support an increase to $15 an hour and hopefully get a union, can't we? And for those who've worked hard all their lives and played by the rules, but are living on way too little with small or no annual increases, it's way past time to expand Social Security. Seniors spend more of their money on things like medicine than they do on gasoline. And we need to recognize that with better indexing to increase those benefits to cover their real expenses. And at the same time, make the wealthier pay more into the system. By lifting that regressive arbitrary cap of about $117,000, where you no longer collect Social Security taxes, you can extend that program for decades to come. Just this past week in Washington, I introduced a bill to do just that with some of my colleagues, to help boost the average benefit by $120 a month for America's seniors and make the wealthy pay more. It's time our seniors got a raise. Friends, that's it. Help people get good paying jobs. Help people get paid well and stimulate the economy, and help people who work hard or worked hard to not live in poverty. In other words, we all do better when we all do better. If we do that, people will care enough to come out and vote, and all those other issues we care about will be easier to get done. That's what Russ Feingold and Tammy Baldwin fight for. That's what Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren fight for. That's what Keith Ellison and the Progressive Caucus in Congress fight for. That's what I hear every day from people across South Central Wisconsin. And that's not what you're hearing from Scott Walker and Ron Johnson and Donald Trump. They have a very opposite theory of life. They think if you give tax breaks and incentives to the wealthiest 1% or 2%, we might get the chance to catch some of the trickle. Trust me, no one but the 1%, top 1%, actually believe that. And those are the financial donors of Walker, Johnson, and Trump. So, let me end with this. Do you want to turn our state around in 2018 by electing a different governor? Yeah. Then make it easier to form a union. Do you want to help elect different faces in the U.S. Senate this November? Promise to raise the minimum wage and expand Social Security. Do you want to elect new majorities in the state legislature in Wisconsin? Help get access to higher education and apprenticeships for everyone. It's not that hard. Our friend Paul Wellstone may have said it 17 years ago, but it is dead on today as it was then. Say it with me. We all do better when we all do better. We do. It's the Midwestern way. It's the Wisconsin way. It's the progressive way. It's the way we'll change the state and nation. Thank you, Fighting Bob Fest. I look forward to working with all of you to make sure we all do better. Thank you very much. Thank you.